Well, thank you. Such a kind introduction. So there you go. Thank you so much to Karen, Michelle, Pam, all the many, many hands that I know went into making this day so special. And thank you to the women who shared so vulnerably. I know that's hard to get up and share about personal, difficult things, and they did it so beautifully and so vulnerably. So I'm excited to be able to talk about being grateful, gratitude. What an awesome topic and such a necessary topic. It's actually, I don't know, you may be aware of this, but it's a very popular topic of conversation currently amongst the health and wellness community and many other areas of learning at the moment. If you Google gratitude, because, you know, Google teaches all things, there's so much on gratitude in just the health wellness world and how being grateful helps you. There are even scientific departments and universities that just focus on the science of gratitude and its effects, and it's been studied formally now for the past 30 years. And I read lots of different things on gratitude, which was helpful for me as an ungrateful person at times. And five just recent findings from studies, these were five of them. That one, that grateful people, they're more hopeful and they're healthier. They have improved sleep quality. They have increased helpfulness and empathy. Increased resilience. I mean, who doesn't want these qualities, right? How good do these sound? And these are all cited actually by multiple sources and so appealing. Am I talking loudly enough? Can you hear me? Okay. I have a loud voice apparently. But they're so, I mean, we all want that, right? Who doesn't want to have those qualities in abundance? I do. I know, I'm sure all of you do, and that's why you're here today. So today, what does God's Word teach us about gratitude? And how do we attain this sometimes elusive quality? So I wanted to look at an example of someone who was grateful and others who weren't grateful. In Luke 17. And we'll start in verse 11. It says, "Now on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. As he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, 'Jesus, Master, have pity on us.' When he saw them, he said, 'Go show yourselves to the priest.' And as they went, they were cleansed. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him, and he was a Samaritan. Jesus asked, 'Were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Was no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?' Then he said to him, 'Rise and go, your faith has made you well.'" Jesus is traveling in this story, and he's about to enter a village, and these men call out to him from a distance. They had leprosy. They were outcasts. They were unclean, and they had to live outside, alone, because at this time, and today to some degree, the disease was highly infectious, and it was incurable. It was incurable by man, and many people believed that God inflicted the curse of leprosy upon people for the sins they committed. In fact, those with leprosy were so despised and loathed that they were not allowed to live in any community with their own people, and Numbers 5:2 states that. Among the 61 defilements of ancient Jewish laws, leprosy was second only to a dead body in seriousness. A leper wasn't allowed to come within 6 feet of any other human, including his own family. And the disease was considered so revolting and just dangerous that the leper wasn't permitted to come within 150 feet of anyone when the wind was blowing. Or they died. And that was the only way they really knew how to contain the disease. So they were trying to protect the well, and this is how they dealt with it. So these people that were suffering from this disease, they were suffering physically, obviously, as it's very obviously you can see the pictures, the damage it does to the body and the limbs, and most of us have heard of leprosy. But they were suffering emotionally too. They were separated from their loved ones. They were suffering all alone. And those of you who have had health struggles. No, I mean, I appreciate Hazel sharing. It's so hard when you go through health struggles, and then sharing about her husband and the support of him. But imagine going through this all by yourself and being cast out from society and community. And this disease, it went on from 10 to 30 years, with the victims usually dying from low resistance, other diseases, or infections. It could be easily transmitted by inhalation, bodily contact, even contact with clothing, and that's why there's all these clear details on how to deal with the disease. Sorry, a bit croaky. And in these times, it had the potential to wipe out a whole population, so that's why there were such extreme, you know, things taken in order to protect people. But in 1982, there was a treatment that came in to affect, I think it's an antibiotic, someone who's medical would know this, but it can actually kill the bacterium. But sadly, even today, there's about 1.5 million cases in the world of people living with leprosy. So it happens today, mostly in third world countries, where they just don't have access to this. As a teenager, actually, I went over to India for a month, and I remember going into a leprosy colony kind of thing where they built these homes for people who had leprosy. And I remember the people that we were with saying to us, just touch them. Like, just people never touch them. They never feel the feeling of touch, something we just take for granted. And it was amazing to just, because it isn't that contagious if you have a healthy immune system today, going in and just putting my hands on people or touching them and how much it would mean to them because no one ever touched them. And so it continues even today. But this man, he wasn't just a leper, he was also a Samaritan. And the Samaritans, they embraced a religion that was a mixture of Judaism and idolatry. 2 Kings 7, if you want to reference it, 2 Kings 17, 26 through 28 talks about that. Samaritans came about because the Israelite inhabitants of Samaria had intermarried with the foreigners and had adopted their idolatrous religion. So Samaritans were generally considered half-breeds and were universally despised by the Jews. You know, from our perspective, he's been dealt a hard hand, this man. All 10 men, actually, or 9 men. All of them have been dealt. They've been dealt a hard hand. But we know this man is also a Samaritan. A life that's filled with health challenges that were only increasing, and social and racial prejudices that would have placed him also on the outskirts of society. Yet this interaction with Jesus, it would change everything. And he would not only find physical healing, but he would find soul healing salvation as well. Gratitude is found in the sovereignty of God. From a very young age, I don't know if you can relate to this, but I was fixated on fairness and equality. I grew up watching LA Law. Did anyone else watch LA Law? Which is, I'm sure, exactly, for any lawyer in here would tell us exactly like that, right? I'm sure it's very realistic. I actually wanted to be a lawyer. I did my work experience in a barrister's chambers, and I moved to America for university and did my degree in criminology and criminal justice, and it's all about fairness. And the more I learned, the more unjust everything seemed. The more you focus on things being fair, the more unfair they are. And in my short 40 years of life experience, that's what I'm here to share with you. Life's not fair. There you go. So profound. It's funny. I have, you know, four girls, and the amount of fights that ensue over issues of fairness, and I'm talking like deep issues, like whose turn it is to sit in the middle seat of the car. More fights over the positioning as we drive in the car than anything else. We have a table that has a bench seat, and then it has ones with backs. Only two people get to sit at the ones with backs every meal. You better bet every meal they've been keeping track on who sat in those chairs last. But it's funny, that's not fair, it's not fair. I mean, so frequently, how often I hear that. But that's the way, even as adults, we can still feel that way. Life doesn't feel fair. So where do we turn? In Isaiah 40, sorry, I'm just saying. Verse 13 says, "Who has understood the mind of the Lord, or instructed him as his counselor? Whom did the Lord consult to enlighten him, and who taught him the right way? Who was it that the nations are like a drop in a bucket? They are regarded as dust on the scales. He weighs the islands as though they were fine dust." And down in 21, "Do you not know? Have you not heard? Has it not been told to you from the beginning? Have you not understood since the earth was founded? He sits enthroned above the circle of the earth, and its people are like grasshoppers. He stretches out the heavens like a canopy and spreads them out like a tent to live in. He brings princes to naught and reduces the rulers of this world to nothing. No sooner are they planted, no sooner are they sown, no sooner do they take root in the ground, than he blows on them and they wither, and a whirlwind sweeps them away like chaff. To whom will you compare me, or who is my equal, says the Holy One? Lift your eyes and look to the heavens. Who created all these? He who brings out the starry host one by one and calls them each by name. Because of his great power and mighty strength, not one of them is missing. Why do you say, O Jacob, and complain, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord. My cause is disregarded by my God. Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary, and his understanding no one can fathom. He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak." What a beautiful passage of scripture. You know, the only place I believe to find true trust and peace is in this God. The God whose mind we cannot fathom, we cannot understand, who all the nations are but a drop in a bucket. I mean, you think about that, right? Like, I thought this was kind of a cool visual. You have the whole world is just a drop. Things that are so big, so important to us, to God, are just a little drop. Who created each and every star in the heavens and calls them by name, and because of his power, not one is missing. But there are billions of them that we will never even know the existence of. You know, this is a true story, but there was an English minister and his wife, and they had two tickets on a maiden voyage on a ship named the Titanic. Right before they were set to go on the trip, his wife got really ill, and they had to cancel the trip, and they weren't able to go. Obviously, we all know what happened to the Titanic. So he saved the tickets, and he framed his tickets. And underneath the tickets, he wrote, "A testimony to the love of God." And one day, a friend of his was visiting, and he shared this story with his friend. And his friend said, "You have the ticket friend on the Titanic, an evangelist, a man by the name of Harper, and he died ministering to people. Did God love you more than Harper? What you should have written is a testimony to the sovereignty of God. It's a great mystery. One man's life spared, another's taken. Some of us today are healthy, and others are sick. Some have great opportunities in their careers, others are frustrated. Some have great wealth, others are poor. Some have the families they desired, others struggle with infertility. This sovereignty is a great mystery. And like it says in verse 13, and though we can't understand it, and we can't fathom it, we can rest in it. That he doesn't make mistakes. We're not drifting in a sea of chance. But it's guided by the sovereign God. And this passage in Isaiah, I love that, because this is what Isaiah is saying. He's saying, tell my people I'm in control. Tell them it's going to be okay. You know, this man, this day he interacts with Jesus, it's not by chance. And nor is it by chance for the other nine men too. Jesus loved all of them, regardless of how they responded. He loved them all. And why this man's had to suffer, you know, we don't understand. We can't understand. Why was he inflicted with this disease? We can't fathom. Our minds cannot fathom. But what we do understand is that God is in control of our lives. And I think in accepting this for ourselves, we're able to find peace. And from that peace flows gratitude. Because no longer are we focused on the injustices or the disappointments of our lives, as difficult as they may be. And by no means am I saying that we don't need to work through things or grieve and that this is just a quick, you know. I think there are things in life that are incredibly painful and need, take time and we need to process. But we are able to rest in God's sovereignty. We don't have to carry the burden of trying to make sense of life. We're moving overseas, actually. We're moving to England in July. And so we brought shipping people out to come out to our place. And anyway, in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, they're going to ship our stuff in June, which is very realistic, obviously, because ships get to England that quickly. No, obviously unrealistic. Anyway, they said, your stuff needs to be ready by next week, like a week Monday. And I felt so overwhelmed. And there was this big part of me that wanted to say, this is just not fair. This will be my sixth home in the last 5 years. And moving my kids so much, right? I could play the orchestra for myself. But when I focus on who God is, and that through all this, he's molding me and strengthening me in ways that I don't understand, and I can't fathom, and I can feel quite frustrated in, but I actually can rest in that, that I don't have to exert mental energy to try to figure that out. It gives me a sense of peace, and it gives me gratitude. It helps me to be grateful that I may not have clarity. And I think many things in this life we may not have clarity for, but we can have peace. And I know each and every one of us here and each and every one of you are walking your own paths, and you too can have that peace. Oops. Sorry. My second final point is the power of gratitude. You know, I think that gratitude is often an overlooked spiritual attribute. And because of that, we miss so many of its blessings. At least I do. I don't know if you can relate to that. But how did this man show his gratitude? in verse 15 and 16. Oh, it's cool. I can actually see it here. It says, one of them, when he saw he was healed, came back, praising God in a loud voice, he threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him, and he was a Samaritan. You know, he praised God in a loud voice. You know, he was loud. He was excited. It says he threw himself at Jesus' feet. I mean, what a humbling act to just throw yourself down. And he thanked him. You know, isn't it easy sometimes just to forget to say thank you? I mean, I don't know how many times a day I say to my daughters, say thank you, say thank you, say thank you. But, you know, the truth is, how often do I not say thank you? Like, how often do I not acknowledge what God does for me? It's embarrassing to think of how frequently I don't say thank you. And Jesus, he cares. He notices. He notices that this man is the only man who bothered to return and thank him. But the most amazing thing is what happens at the end of this story. When Jesus says to him, we're not all 10 cleansed. Where are the other 9? Has no one returned to give praise to God except this foreigner? Then he said to him, rise and go. Your faith has made you well. You know, we know that they had already received physical healing. He was healed. It's not like this point is when Jesus is healing him. I believe he's being healed spiritually, which is of even greater worth than his physical healing. But had this man not been grateful, had he not come back and expressed his gratitude, he would have missed this. You know, how often do we miss the blessings? Do we miss the things that God is doing in our lives around us and wants to do with our lives because we're not grateful? You know, I wanted to share this short video with you.
Cures of our addiction. Waiting for the next season of life to think we're good enough. waiting for the next number on the scale to say, I'm okay with. Waiting for the next dream, the next house, the next step up. The next bend in the road that finally makes us feel we've arrived at contentment. Forgive us, Lord, for our waiting room addiction. Addicted to always thinking we're in a waiting room. Counting down the days until we enter real life. When real life is happening right now. And you are the one waiting for us to give you thanks for the miracle of living. Wake us up out of our waiting room addiction.
I'm 25 days thankful for our baby's laughter.
I'm 15 days thankful that who I am is enough and cure us in Thanksgiving.
I'm 3 months thankful for where I'm living right now.
I'm 45 days thankful for my life now. Show us how we have room in our lives to give you thanks. Right now.
I'm 3 weeks thankful that I have a job to provide for my family.
I'm 1 day thankful for the gift of now.
You know, I don't know how you felt watching that, but for me it really spoke to me. You know, addicted for something in life to happen. Oh, yeah. You know, when it's happening all around us. And God is actually waiting for us to be thankful and grateful. You know, we have room in our lives to be thankful right now. And so often I think we can be grateful for the everyday things. There's so much that we take for granted. Like that sister shared, you know, I'm grateful that I'm breathing right now. I'm grateful that I'm standing. I'm grateful that all the things we just take for granted. You know, whoops. Okay. You know, were these other 9 men who were healed, were they just evil, wicked people? You know, the ones who didn't come back and thank Jesus? I have a feeling they were probably just like us. You know, they were aware of their need for Jesus when they could see their physical need. They felt really desperate. But then once they were healed, they became self-consumed probably, distracted, self-reliant, independent. When it came to their spiritual needs. You know, how often have I cried out to Jesus in the midst of a health crisis or emotional turmoil or when I've struggled with depression or different things, but then forgotten to thank him for waking me up in the morning, for keeping my heart beating, for giving me good friends to rely on during hard times, but also thanking him for good friends to laugh with and to love life with in the good times. I think these men weren't so different to us. They were just consumed with themselves. There was a happiness study that I was reading. It was quite interesting, actually. And it was saying, you know, we're all sort of at this baseline of happiness. And I don't know if this is true, but, you know, go with me. And it said, you know, for the most part, it's unchanging. Like, you're sort of at this level of happiness. And so if you're sitting in a doctor's office or if you're laying on a beach, you feel pretty much the same way. And so much of being happy is all in our minds. Actually, I thought that's really true, isn't it? Like, so often I can think, oh, if I could just lay on a beach. if I could just, you know, be on a holiday. If I could just take a break. If I could be out of this difficult situation. If I could, you know. But the truth is, it's really about me changing my mindset. So I had just some simple practical ideas for you to end. And I'm sure you could all think of many more. You know, the studies show that keeping... That one study, I'm going to talk about keeping gratitude journal, but before I do, there was one other study that I thought this is really interesting. They said if you write down things that you are grateful for every day for 10 minutes, It can increase your long-term well-being by more than 10%. And that's the same impact as doubling your income. That's pretty crazy, right? We're all thinking, man, if my income was doubled, how would I feel? But you can actually increase the way you feel by just writing down the things you're grateful for. But that is the first practical, is keep a gratitude journal. You know, at the end of the day or the week, write down, or even at the, or at the beginning of the day. I like to do it at the beginning of the day just to get my mind, because I can wake up and feel grouchy about all the different things that I don't feel grateful for. And so I've been doing this actually for a while, just writing down. And I've got to say, sometimes they're pitiful. Like sometimes all I'm grateful for is coffee, is food related, is the amount of sleep I received. It's really quite shallow. But even just making myself think that, and some days it's much deeper, you know. But just making myself train my mind to think differently, to focus on what I have that's good instead of what I have that's not good, it can be so helpful. And Philippians 4:8 says that. It says, finally, sisters, whatever's true, whatever's noble, whatever's right, whatever's pure, whatever's lovely, whatever's admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. You know, God wants us to train our minds to think about good things, things to be grateful for. The second one is, you know, this is another just a practical thought, is set an alarm on your phone that will go off periodically throughout the day to remind you. And each time it stops, remind yourself of something you're grateful for. You know, or leave little notes for yourself around your office or around your house or on your mirror where you're getting ready. Just for things that you're grateful for. And remind yourself, so in the moments where you're just not feeling grateful, you remember, oh, wait, you know. Because I think often God is doing things and helping us, and we have much to be grateful for, and we forget. Oh, just last week, this whatever happened, and we're back to, you know, that negative spiral. And 2 Peter 3:1 says, dear friends, this is now my second letter to you. I have written both of them as reminders to stimulate you to wholesome thinking. The next one is, you know, don't jump out of bed immediately at the sound of your alarm, if any of you do. Instead, take a moment to pause, take some deep breaths, think of things to be grateful for. And then pause throughout the day. Take moments to slow down your mind. You know, Ephesians 5:20 says, always giving thanks to God the Father for everything in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. And the final one is, you know, do something kind for someone else. Express your gratitude. Express it verbally. Tell them. Pay someone a compliment. Encourage someone. Build someone up with your words. You know, in spreading joy and appreciation, it actually makes us more grateful. It makes us more grateful as people, as we give. And Acts 20:35 says that. It says, it is more blessed to give than to receive. The blessing comes more to us when we give. You know, the Bible, it talks about training our minds, renewing them, being transformed, and truly being grateful. You know, we are able today to trust in the sovereignty of God. And not just trust, but rest in that. Find peace. And if today you feel like, I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to have a relationship with God. I don't know what she's talking about, this crazy woman. Or if you're just unsure, I don't even know if I believe in God. I don't know what to believe. That's okay. Ask someone to study the Bible with you, to share with you what they believe and why they believe it and where they found peace in their relationship with God through the scriptures. And I'd encourage you to look deeper and to dig deeper, because the Bible is so full and rich of just answers that our souls need and the healing that our souls need. And if you haven't experienced this peace and you don't feel at peace, ask your friend too to share that with you. And find ways to grow in gratitude. Soul healing, saving gratitude. Because its benefits will flow out into all areas of your life. Thanks so much for having me, and thank you so much for being such warm, gracious hosts. Thank you.